from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being until we ask for calls. We have with us today a Mr. Myra Neville. And he, of course, works for the, he's one of the directors of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And he's going to be commenting today on a new preparation by Fritz or Fred Smith, who is the president of Competitive Enterprise Institute, entitled Eco-Paganism-Eco-Socialism, Severe Threats to America's Future. Now, what is eco-paganism about, Myron?
Well, you know, there's a... it's a provocative tag, and I should say Fred Smith regrets that he's unable to be with you today because he's ill.
Well, I hope he gets better in a hurry.
Yes.
Tell him to take lots of vitamin C and vitamin D.
Right.
And, of course, that'll help get him feeling better. And, of course, if he listened to Radio Liberty at all and did it, we tell him he wouldn't get sick like that, but that's all right. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, of course, there's a huge attempt going on right now to subvert evangelical Christians into the environmental movement. And I think it's important to understand that the environmental movement is really based on pagan assumptions and beliefs. Not that the earth is the Lord's, but the Lord, the earth is the Lord. That we owe it, that is, we owe Mother Earth loyalty and care and concern, rather than God. And there is what's going on today and has been going on really for 10 years when a thing called the Evangelical Environmental Network first tried to sign up evangelical Christians to opposing reform of the Endangered Species Act. Now they have created the Evangelical Climate Initiative to try to sign up evangelicals to support action to ration energy and address what they claim is catastrophic global warming.
But, of course, what this really is an attack on the infrastructure of the United States, because this whole Kyoto Protocol is really aimed at the United States. It came out of a meeting, the secret meeting that was held in 1992 on the good yacht Britannia by Prince Charles, when they got Al Gore and all the environmentalists and corporation and banking leaders together and laid out the agenda that was carried out, you know, by this second Earth Summit in Rio in 1992. And, of course, really, this is not going to affect Europe because, of course, a lot of that, they actually have, you know, a lot of nuclear energy. France is 80% nuclear energy. It is really an attack on America, because if we cut back on our fossil fuel consumption, why, we'll have to cut our living standards back, you know, about 20%, 30%, 40%, won't we?
Well, that's right. And, you know, the goal that the environmentalists have set for what follows the Kyoto Global Warming Treaty is to reduce our use of coal, oil, and natural gas by between 60% and 80%.
But, of course, it doesn't affect communist China, the biggest polluter in the world. If this is about pollution, why doesn't it affect communist China and India, which are, of course, large polluters?
Well, that's a good question too. They are not participating in the first round of Kyoto, but the environmental movement completely intends. They strongly intend that in the next round, that these other large polluting countries, and I don't want to call them polluting countries, these large energy using countries, will become. They will have to start rationing energy as well.
But what happens What happens if we destroy America and they don't want to go along and destroy their countries? Then what do we do? We're going to be back in just a moment with Myron DeBell right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest today is Myron DeBell, and he comes from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and back in Washington, D.C. And we're going to be talking today about a treatise that's put together by the president, Fred Smith, from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, called Eco-Paganism, Eco-Socialism. And Myron was simply talking about the Kyoto Protocol, all about, of course, the environmentalists are trying to recruit Christians into this global environmentalist movement. And one of the big things is global warming. After all, everybody knows the globe is warming, and it's because of man's CO2 emissions. Of course, nobody ever talks about the largest greenhouse gas. Over 90% of greenhouse gases are water vapors, but you know, and CO2 only makes up about 3% certainly of greenhouse gases, but nobody talks about what this is really about. It's an attack on the economy of America. It's part of an effort to impoverish our people. I pointed out, of course, that the Kyoto Protocol does not involve China, which is the largest polluter in the world. And Myron was simply saying, but in the next round, they hope, of course, that China will come on board. But Myron, why would China want to destroy their economy simply for something that is not a real factor?
Well, I think that this shows how ambitious the environmental movement really is, that they're really taking on reality here. They think that somehow if they can pressure, they've already won in Europe and they've convinced them, but of course Europe, you know, Europe signed on to the Kyoto Treaty to reduce their energy use, but in fact they're not meeting their targets. So they're failing. Japan signed on, but they're not meeting their targets. Canada signed on, and they're failing to meet their targets. But what they hope is if they can force all these countries to toe the Kyoto line and fall in line in terms of reducing energy use, they'll eventually force the United States. And then all of these countries together, the EU, Europe, and Japan, will force China and India through trade sanctions, for example. So they really are taking on the whole world here, and they understand that it's against China's interests or India's interests, but they really think that over time they can win that political battle.
Well, what happens if they destroy America and then the Chinese don't want to play their game?
Well, I think that's right. We're clearly not going to sign on, but they are, as I said, trying to sign on every interest group they can and every group of Americans. They're working on national defense conservatives, people who worry about buying oil from the Middle East. They've started the Evangelical Climate Initiative, which has been...
Hold that thought right there.
Yes.
We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Myron was just saying that these groups, and of course what they're doing is trying to bring the Christian groups on board, and of course to pursue this goal of, you know, trying to get through legislation, and of course then limit energy production and use. If you do that, why, we'll take our economy back, almost, not quite to the Stone Age, but it's really an attack on industrialized America. Why would you want to destroy the industries of America? Why, very simply, they hate America, and even though that they may not be able to accomplish everything they want, they've almost doubled the price of electricity and triple the price of natural gas. And so even if they can't pass the legislation, they're rationing it by cost, aren't they? And they're raising the price of oil, and at each step they've raised the price of energy, and people use less and less and less. Isn't that true?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. If you can't get a legislation through to require rationing of energy, you figure out ways to restrict the supply of energy and therefore raise the price for people so they have to use less. And that's what's going on in this country. We have vast resources. The world gets about 85% of its energy from coal, oil, and natural gas, the fossil fuels. And the United States gets about 85% of its energy from those three sources. And we have vast reserves that have been prohibited, marked off, put under moratorium, and they're off limits. All of our offshore areas on the Pacific Coast, the Atlantic Coast, the Eastern Gulf of Mexico, the Alaska Pacific Coast, 97.5% of our offshore oil resources are prohibited from production. And so we have huge amounts of oil. The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska, if they would open up a very tiny little piece of that vast refuge, we could perhaps produce over 10 billion barrels of oil there. So the Eastern Gulf of Mexico is another good example. Huge amounts of natural gas, and yet they cannot drill there and they cannot produce it there. So the goal is to restrict the supply of energy and therefore raise the price and force people to use less.
You know, I almost have to laugh when I see them show pictures of the pristine Arctic Wildlife Reserve, and you'll see these reindeer there, and you'll see the flowers on the ground, and the snow-capped mountains adjacent to that. Now, that's taken about during the 1 or 2 months of the year when there's not totally frozen up there. You know, I mean,
and it's 75 or 150 miles away from where they would be producing the oil. A long, long ways away from the coastal plain. It's up in those beautiful mountains, which are protected as wilderness areas by Congress.
And, of course, they're simply lying to the American people. But if you control the media, well, you can get the people to believe anything. They will tell you, of course, that the glaciers are melting. They will tell you that the Arctic, Arctic mass is melting, but we're in a stage of global warming. We haven't been since the 1600s. People have forgotten that 1,000 years ago, Greenland was called Greenland because it was green, and then we went into a time of great global cooling, and that ended in the 1600s, and now we're in a global warming sphere, and nobody ever tells the American people that you go through these cycles. But it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is, if you say it often enough, everybody will believe. Go right ahead.
Well, Dr. Stan, I agree with that. I would just make one little tiny correction. I think actually the little ice age, the global cooling that went on from the 1300s, really didn't end until the mid-1800s. There were very cold decades in the early part of the 19th century around the world, and so we are emerging from the little ice age, and maybe burning coal, oil, and natural gas has something to do with that. Maybe that is helping the warming effect a little bit. But by and large, we're coming out of a period when Europe and China were under great stress because of crop failures due to cold weather. The growing season wasn't long enough to feed the people who lived in the temperate climate. So we are indeed emerging from the little ice age, and maybe burning coal, oil, and natural gas has a little bit to do with that. But most of these things, as you said, that you hear on the TV and read in the headlines are just, they're most of them are fantasies.
All right, fine. I know an awful lot of scientists who really don't think there's any scientific evidence that human activity, and that is CO2, influences that. But we can certainly disagree on that.
Well, that's
right
a
ahead.
Debate. I mean, yeah, they may be right. I mean, but we could even give them the fact that human beings are affecting the climate a little bit and still not find anything to worry about. I think that's a debatable point, but it's not one that is going to change the outcome of the debate. Human beings are making, we impact the world in ways. We have land use changes, and we burn a lot of coal, oil, and natural gas. But it's a really minor effect compared to the big natural changes that the Earth undergoes in natural cycles, solar cycles. The sun's output waxes and wanes. That must be the main driver behind climate change.
I think it always has been, going back many thousands of years. And there are records going back. But, of course, they don't want you to know about that. They don't want you to know why Greenland is called Greenland.
Right.
And they want to believe that, oh, my goodness, why pretty soon, Empire State Building is going to be submerged underwater. New York will be submerged. Oh, my goodness. And it's all made up. But it doesn't matter how ridiculous it is. If you say it often enough, people will believe. So, go ahead.
Well, I think, this question of sea level rise, that's the latest scare, that Greenland is going to melt or the Antarctic is going to melt, and suddenly the sea level will rise 20 feet. Well, as you said, the Vikings lived in Greenland 1,000 years ago. They had to abandon it in the 13th century because it got too cold. They could no longer grow grasses and crops for their livestock. And so we know that the Earth has been warmer just 1,000 years ago. We know it's been considerably warmer at several periods since the last ice age, and yet Greenland didn't melt. The sea levels didn't rise 20 feet. So it's very unlikely. However, having said that, the thing about sea level rise, it has been rising since the end of the last ice age slowly. And if it stops rising and the sea levels start going down, that's a very bad sign, because that means we're entering another ice age. And an ice age is a big problem, because it was only 13,000 years ago that, say, the state of Wisconsin and the state of Minnesota were under a couple miles of ice. And our existence is going to become, humankind's existence is going to become very difficult when the next ice age starts. But that's something that the Earth and the solar system will work out, not not mankind.
And I think that that's something that is many hundreds of years away, if not thousands of years away.
Right, so, we don't know. That's right.
And so, but basically the crisis they've created here is so artificial. I mean, they've prevented us from having nuclear energy. Now, everybody else in the world can have nuclear energy. They have 80% of France's electricity comes from nuclear. A significant part of Japan's electricity comes from nuclear. We're building and we're financing the building of 5 new nuclear power plants over in China. The first of hundreds are going to put in.
Right.
But see, we can't have them here because everybody knows they explode, and we know what happened at Three Mile Island, and I love that sign that says, you know, more people died in the back of Ted Kennedy's car at Chappaquiddick than died at Three Mile Island, and that's true, but nobody ever tells you that.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, the global warming people, the alarmists say the global warming is the greatest threat facing mankind and facing the Earth. But we can't use nuclear power to solve the problem because that's too dangerous. So the question is, which threat is greater? If global warming is really such a big threat, you'd think they'd be promoting nuclear energy in this country, which doesn't have carbon dioxide emissions. It uses radioactivity, but doesn't throw any kind of emissions into the air. And so you would think that they would be supporting nuclear power, but no, we can't use nuclear power. What they want is for people to become poorer by forcing them to use less energy.
Well, we are going to actually begin using nuclear power. If you are reading and looking at what's going on behind the scenes, basically this is a scam. Nobody ever asks who funds the environmental movement that has blocked nuclear energy and who benefits from blocking it for 30 years, why we haven't built a new refinery or a nuclear power plant in the United States. And somebody's put up an awful lot of money to fund the environmental movement. Have you gotten into that in your studies at all?
Oh, sure. The environmental movement, when it first got started, was a kind of grassroots movement. It was largely funded by small contributions from millions of people who were concerned about local pollution issues, like dirty air and dirty water in the communities where they lived. And that environmental movement largely succeeded by passing legislation, the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act, which have some serious problems and were probably far too expensive. But in fact, our air and our water quality is much cleaner now than it was 30 or 40 years ago. But now the environmental movement is largely funded by big charitable foundations with names like Rockefeller and Pew and Ford and Mellon. And if you look, and Hewlett and Packard, and if you look into this evangelical climate initiative, which we started out talking about, where they're trying to convince evangelical Christians to support global warming alarmism, that effort is not funded by evangelical Christians. It's funded by the Hewlett Foundation, the Pew Charitable Trust, and the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. And the Hewlett Foundation, by the way, one of their top goals from their founder on, Bill Hewlett, he was very concerned about overpopulation and he wanted to support abortion. And so many of their dollars, their hundreds of millions of dollars that they put out every year, are on population control and abortion access programs. And that's some of their money is now going to support the evangelical climate initiative.
And of course, what they really want is to dramatically decrease the number of people in the world. Gee, I wonder how they're going to do that. And then, of course, they want to reduce the amount of things that we utilize. They want to lower our standard of living. And if you read their writings, they'll tell you, if we just got the people down out of the way they are in Eastern Europe, you know.
Right.
They really want to lower our standings that far. If you want to read their writings, we have them in something called the Sustainable Development Syllabus. And I'm sure that the center where... you know, has the material, and when we get back, we're going to give them an opportunity to let us know about the information they have available. But this is one of the greatest scams, you know, of all time. But if you say it often enough and you control the media, you can convince the people. Well, Myron, why don't you pick up the story right there?
Well, I think that you mentioned that the goal of the environmental movement is really population control and making people poor. It comes back to something that Al Gore had in his book, Earth in the Balance, this famous equation, and that is that our impact on the planet, our negative impact, is a function of three variables which you can multiply. Population times affluence, that is how wealthy we are, times technology. And so to restore the, put the Earth back into balance, according to Al Gore and his environmental allies, we need lower population, less wealth, and much less technology. And that's really underlies an awful lot of the agenda of the environmental movement.
And of course, he calls for a wretching transformation of society. Now, what he's really talking about is lowering your living standards out there in the audience, not that of the elite which he represents. I mean, he's fabulously wealthy. His family was very close to Arm and Hammer, made a lot of money at Occidental Petroleum, and they have millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. But he wants to lower your living standards because that's how we're going to protect the planet. He wants you to have less children. I think he's got three or four of his own, but he wants you to lower your standards and not have so many children. I don't know why he doesn't start with his own, get rid of a few of those, but the elite really seem to have a great deal of disdain for us common people, don't they, Myron? Have you had that feeling?
Well, yeah, and if you look at the environmental movement in general, there's a very strong effort now, starting in the United Kingdom, in Britain, but it's already in Europe, and it's starting to reverberate in this country, that we need to control unquote unnecessary air travel, and that a lot of people are getting that airline fares are too low, they're too cheap, there are too many bargains, so that people can go off on unnecessary flights and to get out of the cold weather in the Northeast or Michigan or North Dakota and fly to Arizona or Florida for a couple of weeks. A person in my office just flew off to Florida for a week of sunshine. And so those things need to be curtailed because they use too much energy. But now, of course, if you look at the environmental movement, what is the most remarkable thing about it? They have big international meetings and conferences in glamorous places and resorts all around the world, and hundreds and in many cases thousands of people are flying to these things. And so if we're going to talk about unnecessary air travel, they're the first ones I'd like to go after.
Maybe we could do something about President Bush flying, to India and to Afghanistan and to Pakistan. I'm sure that they wouldn't feel too bad if he didn't show up over there.
That's right.
But, of course, the thing is that there's this total elitist attitude. The elite know what's better for the common people, and they're going to force us to do it. They're going to create an artificial raise in the price of electricity, and it was artificial. There was no reason for the price to go up, except that they sold us, oh my goodness, how high electricity prices are. We're going to bring them down. We're going to deregulate electricity and bring the prices down. You know what happened? They went up. They doubled. Some places they even tripled. How could that happen? Because they lied to us, because they knew exactly what was going to happen. And, of course, they've raised the price of natural gas by creating artificial shortages. And the same thing with all of this. They want, of course, to lower our living standards, but not their living standards. And that's really what's so hypocritical about this. The elite, of course, are going to continue living very well, but not us common people.
Well, yeah, and
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Myron Ebel. How do you pronounce that?
Ebel.
Ebel. All right, fine. Uh-huh. Ebel. Myron Ebel. And, of course, he comes from the Competitive Enterprise Institute back in Washington, D.C. And before we go on, why don't you get your website out and what people would get if they got into touch with you and your organization?
Well, we're a small, nonprofit, nonpartisan public policy institute, and we specialize in regulatory issues, red tape and regulation, from a free market and limited government perspective. And you can find out more about the issues we cover at our website, which is CEI.org, CEI.org. And we work a lot on environmental regulations, and we work on some other kinds of regulations as well.
All right, that's www.ceelorg, is that right?
No, CEI, CEI.org.
CEIORG, okay, fine.
Right.
Competitive Enterprise Institute. Okay, fine, that's CEI.org. So, All right, then. My producer's got to get a dot in there so we can see of Enterprise Institute, and there's a dot before you get to the ORG. And it really, I think that it's well worthwhile for people to begin to understand that most of what we're being told about the environmental movement is being utilized to justify ever more laws. Because, of course, the title of the paper we're talking about, Eco-Paganism, and then the second part of that is eco-socialism, because the solution to every environmental problem is a new series of laws. Isn't that true?
That's right. And you were talking earlier about the elitism of the environmental movement. It goes way back. You know, the Duke of Wellington, when he was Prime Minister of England after his great military career, and of course he was a great aristocrat and a very rich man and a very great man, he objected to the railroads that were suddenly being built all across England. And the reason he did was because it would only allow the poor people to travel where they shouldn't be traveling. So this elitist attitude goes a long way back, and it's and as you say, the answer is always more government and less money in your pocket. That is the recipe of the environmental movement for almost every problem or issue that they raise.
Well, because I can remember when gasoline used to be about 10, 15, 20 cents a gallon, and now, of course, it's up to 260, 280 a gallon. And ladies and gentlemen, they're going to get this up to $6 a gallon in the United States, exactly as they have in Europe, and they'll use all sorts of, oh my goodness, it's those terrible Iranians, or it's Osama bin Laden, he's responsible for all of our problems. But whatever they will tell you, they're going to get the price up. Why? Because they want you to ration your use by price. And if they can create the problem, why, of course, you'll respond as you're supposed to. Have you ever noticed those advertisements we so often see on television about, you know, conserving electricity? I remember a few years ago they would have this fellow who obviously came from the local electricity company. He goes to the house, and he keeps snapping his hands, and the lights would go off and on. These were obviously percussion-sensitive lamps. It's all about turning off the lights. They want to condition you. They want to make your mind think the way they want it to. They're using the mass media to get you to conserve, because that's what it's all about. Lower your consumption. And then we can all be happy, and we can pretty soon get up to the level of the people, the peasants in Eastern Europe. So pick up the story there, Myron.
Well, I think that in terms of energy, the environmental movement, you know, starting back in the 1970s, in the early days of the modern environmental movement, their claim was, and it was in a number of different books and reports, that we're going to run out of all these resources, and that's why we have to conserve and stop using them. We're going to run out of oil. We're going to run out of food. Food production is going to taper off or not increase enough to supply the growing population. And we're going to run out of minerals and metals. Well, of course, we didn't, and these things are more abundant now than they were in the 1970s through new technology and through free markets, giving people the incentives to develop and use new technology. And so now the thing is, no, we're not running out of it. The problem is we've got too much of it, and we have to force people to stop using it because energy use is harming the environment. It gives people too much power over the environment. And going back to this Al Gore thing, our negative impact is population times affluence times technology. Well, the technology that gives us all this wonderful energy that makes our lives so comfortable and gives us such great mobility and allows industry to produce so many products for such low prices, all of that needs to be changed in the name of reducing man's footprint on the earth, that we need to make less of an impact on the earth. And the way to do that is to put government controls on energy use.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I'm very, very concerned about what's going on. Well, we're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Myron Ebell, and we're going to be talking about this whole effort to convince the American people we've got to lower our living standards. After all, if not, global warming is going to destroy the planet. And, of course, we'll all be living underwater. You better get your scuba tank right ready available. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, our schools today are using their control over our children's minds, and you talk to the average child, he honestly believes in global warming. He will tell you all the reasons why nuclear energy is so terrible. I'll never forget talking to a young man recently, and he said why nuclear energy is terrible. Would you want to have a nuclear power plant in your backyard? And I said, look, my son was in the Navy. He was on an aircraft carrier. Every aircraft carrier is powered by nuclear power. He was sleeping not too far away from it. Certainly all of our submarines are powered by nuclear power. I mean, well, what are you going to do then with all the waste material? I said, do what every other country does. They reprocess it. They just have never told the American people they know how to do it. He couldn't believe. He was so furious with me that he just stopped off and wouldn't even speak to me after that. Because his mind had been controlled by the educational process, and certainly we see the propaganda in the newspapers, we hear it on television and radio, we read it in the magazines. It almost seems that everybody out there is doing everything they can to convince us that this is true. And yet this really doesn't threaten the survival of civilization. If we cut back on our energy consumption, we will lower our living standards, and pretty soon we'll raise them to the level of the Bolivian peasant. Is that what they really want, Myron?
Yes, I think so. And I think one of the odd things about this is that, of course, if they were really concerned, if the modern environmental movement was really deeply concerned about the quality of the environment, they would be pushing towards greater wealth and greater energy use, because there's a very strong correlation that has been shown in several different studies between the wealth a society has and its ability and its interest in protecting the environment, so that the wealthiest countries in the world have the highest environmental quality and the poorest countries in the world have the lowest environmental quality. And yet we have the environmental movement with a very long-term campaign to convince us that we really are too wealthy and we should go back to the simple life, as you said, of Bolivian peasants. But of course they have terrible environmental conditions in Bolivia, maybe not as bad as in the former Soviet Union, but then Bolivia isn't a communist country, it may be going that way, but it didn't have 75 or 80 years of communism. I think you're right about that.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest, and we're going to welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. 464-8295. Well, Dr. Stan, if you're out there listening to us across America, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a comment, you agree or disagree with Myron DeBell, we're talking about, of course, this whole effort to use the environmental movement to increase government control over our lives. Increased government control and government regulations, and they really are, though, progressively strangulating so much of our industry here, with these regulations. Hasn't a lot of the, energy-dependent companies like, the aluminum companies, aren't they moving out of America to other countries where they can buy cheap electricity rather than the overly inflated price of electricity here?
Well, yeah, and this is particularly true in the chemical industry. The United States had a few years ago a very, very large chemical industry employing an awful lot of people, hundreds of thousands of people in very high-paying jobs. And what's happened is a lot of chemicals need natural gas, not as an energy source, but as a feedstock. That is, they produce the chemical from the natural gas. Our natural gas prices are now 2 to 3 times that of in most other countries. And consequently, we're outsourcing those jobs very rapidly. And our chemical industry is just disappearing. And in some cases, we are becoming very dependent upon critical chemicals to unstable countries in other parts of the world. So it's a very serious thing, particularly in the chemical industry. But you also mentioned aluminum. They're looking how to get out from under high electricity prices in this country and find lower prices overseas. So yeah, we're working on deindustrializing our economy, because all of our heavy industry depends very much on a lot of on access to an awful lot of energy.
But Myron, this is madness. I mean, deindustrializing our society means lowering the living standard of the average individual and destroying the wealth of our people and destroying the wealth of our society as a nation. What's going to happen to America if these people are successful and if the Christians and the Christian church has helped them destroy America?
Well, Stan, these are very serious problems. And I think, you know, I don't worry about outsourcing low-paying jobs to countries where people are willing to work for much less. And it's, we get a lot of benefit from that. But we are now engaged in a process of outsourcing some of the highest paying jobs in this country because of our artificially high energy prices and, you know, and strangling businesses with red tape and regulations. You know, you mentioned earlier that we haven't built a new nuclear plant in this country for a long time, and yet China is going ahead and building a whole bunch of them.
Not only that, but we're financing it. We're guaranteeing the loans. Isn't that nice of us to guarantee the loans so China can develop all that nuclear energy and electricity, but we can't do it here? What's wrong with this picture?
Well, the picture is that to build a new plant like that or to build a new oil refinery, we haven't built a new oil refinery in this country in nearly 30, I think it's 30 years this year. And consequently, we used to produce more gasoline than we used. We had more capacity. And now what we're finding is that we're importing more and more of our energy, not as crude oil, but as finished gasoline. And it's been refined somewhere else. In other words, we've outsourced those high-paying refinery jobs to someplace like Holland or Taiwan or Saudi Arabia. And the reason is because you can't build a new refinery or a new nuclear plant in this country because of all the permits that you have to get. To build a new plant of that size, say a $2 billion plant, you're going to have to get 15 or 20 permits from, most of them from the federal government, but also from state and local government. And each one of those permits, some outside group will be able to sue in court to block you. Now, I'm not against citizen lawsuits. I think that people should have the right to try to block things that they think are being done illegally or improperly. But this strategy of filing a lawsuit for every different permit is a way to stop things from being built by delay. If you delay things for a few years, everybody will give up. Investors can't you can't have $2 billion of investor money assembled for 15 years while you wait to get through 20 different permits. And that's the problem we face in this country today.
And but that is, of course, why the Rockefeller and the other great tax-exempt foundations have been actually blocking that. You know, we used to have over 350 refineries or 340 refineries. I think we're down to about 140. Are they intentionally cut back on the number of refineries? They block the development of nuclear energy. It is the safest form of electricity, you know, available, and that is, of course, why our nuclear submarines and our nuclear ships, our entire navy, all of our major ships, run with nuclear reactors right on board, and nobody dies in those nuclear reactors. You know, but of course, they've created this specter in our mind. But a lie told often enough eventually comes to be believed. So, you know, I share your concern, Myron. We've got to get the American people to understand that this is part of a planned program, and somebody's made an awful lot of money out of this. And you wonder why it would be that the Rockefeller Foundations, which of course comes from the great Rockefeller oil industries, would be so interested in blocking nuclear power, unless maybe they were waiting until the right time, when maybe they owned a lot of the rights to that, and then maybe they'll build the nuclear power plants. In fact, I understand that even some of those environmental organizations funded by these great corporations are suddenly saying, oh, shucks, maybe we ought to allow that. Maybe suddenly they're going to decide maybe we ought to reprocess the nuclear fuel like everybody else in the world does. We wouldn't have to worry about Yucca Mountain.
Well, you know, I mean, there are lots of motivations. You mentioned all this big money and the elite in this country trying to make people poor. The motivations of these big foundations now, and they're almost all the creation of vast either energy fortunes like Rockefeller or the Pew Charitable Trust, which was based on the Sun Oil fortune of the Pew family, or the Ford Foundation of Henry Ford. These families sort of decline over time. They become decadent, and so the original, you know, buccaneer capitalist who was a great entrepreneur and brought a great new product to the world and figured out how to produce it more cheaply, in the way that John Rockefeller figured out how to produce oil more cheaply, or Henry Ford figured out how to provide automobiles that common people could afford. Those families over many generations turn into, you know, very pampered and isolated. They don't have much connection with the actual necessities of a big industry like an automaker or an oil company. They live in very comfortable surroundings, and they tend to go, you know, sort of pink and green around the edges. And I think a lot of the funding of these foundations is to support a view of the world that is completely at odds with that of the person who created the fortune and created the foundation in the first place, like John Rockefeller or J. Howard Pugh or Henry Ford.
And I certainly agree with you, and I share your concerns that what we have to do and what I do, and I'm sure what you're trying to do, is educate the American people so they can bring pressure to bear on our duly elected officials. Now, do you have any sort of an effort to reach the elected officials back there, or are you primarily educational?
No, we do some activism and political lobbying a little bit under our tax status. We're allowed to do a little bit. I think it's very important that people let their elected members of Congress know that they support access to energy, that they support lowering the regulatory hurdles. We shouldn't be for lower environmental quality. We should be for high environmental standards. But we have so many different kinds of regulatory bottlenecks that don't have anything to do with protecting the environment. They're conflicting regulations and contradictory regulations. So we should support access to energy and harmonizing and making sense of our regulations. For example, in Congress right now, there will be another attempt this year. It almost succeeded in December, and this is a battle that's been going on since 1987, to open a small part of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska to oil exploration. That would create thousands of high-paying jobs in the United States, reduce our trade deficit by hundreds of billions of dollars over the next three decades. And it's something that is very close to being passed in Congress. There are just a few liberal Republicans in the House that are blocking it, and a few liberal Democrats in the Senate that are blocking it. It's very it has majority support in both chambers. That's something that we could get done. But Senator Domenici, the chairman of the Energy Committee, a Republican from New Mexico, and Senator Bingaman, the ranking Democrat of the Energy Committee, also from New Mexico, they are now starting a process by which they hope to put a cap on fossil fuel energy use in the name of doing something about global warming. So another thing that your listeners could do is to tell the members of the Senate, their senators, that we don't want the Domenici-Bingaman emissions bill. That would be another very useful thing to do.
How about say we don't want Senator Domenici and Bingham either? We don't want either one of them there. You know, until these elected officials understand we know they're scammed, until, of course, we can inform the people, of course, with McCain-Feingold, which the president voted for, it suppresses the ability to inform people within 60 days of an election by an organization. This is specifically planned to block freedom of speech. And the president said, well, I was sure that was unconstitutional. That's why I signed it, because I knew the Supreme Court would find it unconstitutional.
He should have vetoed it. And I wanted to say that you mentioned Senator John McCain. He is the biggest supporter of global warming alarmism in the U.S. Congress. He is the leader, and he and Senator Joe Lieberman have the main bill. I mentioned Senator Domenici and Bingaman's bill, but the McCain-Lieberman bill is an even worse bill. And so it's no surprise that Senator McCain would be behind the worst campaign finance law. He's also behind the worst energy and global warming law.
And, of course, he is being run for the Republican nominee for president in the year 2008. So, this is all cut and dried. They know what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. I think he's.
I got to be careful there, Stan. We don't do electioneering, so I don't want to get into.
I wouldn't want you to say anything like that. That's my radical position. So if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, because Myron's going to live back there in Washington, D.C., and he may not want to come on our program again because I'm so outspoken about some of the people I really do dislike back there, who I think are a real threat to the survival of our society, because this whole move towards a global warming is simply a scam. If they are successful, why your standard of living will drop about 50%. Now, how much energy consumption would we actually have to actually cut back on if the Kyoto Protocol had been enacted?
Well, this is all kind of technical, but we committed to reduce our energy use by 2008 to 2012, the years 2008 to 2012, to 7% below 1990 levels. And we are right now 13% above 1990. So that's it. We would have to reduce our energy use starting right now by 20%. But the goal of the environmental movement is to reduce worldwide energy use of fossil fuels. And we get 85% of our energy from coal, oil, and natural gas. Reduce that use by between 60 and 80% by 2050. So this initial 20% drop would just be the down payment. We would then have to double it and triple it to get to the 60 to 80% or quadruple it.
And that is the wretching transformation of society that Al Gore talks about in his book, Earth in the Balance. Wretching
right.
transformation of society.
That's right.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, are we going to be able to head this thing off, at least, with the with President Bush? I disagree with many things, but at least he did not sign the Kyoto Protocol, although my understanding is that many of the government agencies are at least pushing in the direction of implementing it, even though we didn't sign it. Is that true or not?
Well, first of all, in reply to that question, I think, the problem with the executive branch of the federal government is it's so big now. It has a momentum of its own. Unless President Bush had taken incredibly drastic measures, you can't stop that kind of momentum just because you're president. So there is a huge amount of effort towards addressing global warming built into the Energy Department, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Commerce Department, and some others, like even the Department of the Interior, which has federal lands management. So you find that this is continuing to go on. Now, in terms of what President Bush has done, I think he's actually done pretty much the right things. They haven't done a very good job selling it or explaining it. They haven't been very consistent or coherent. But what President Bush has done is said, I'm not going to submit the Kyoto Treaty to be ratified by the Senate. That's the wrong way. Energy rationing and mandatory controls on our energy use by government is not something that we want. That was step one. Then step two was creating a partnership with it's called the Clean Development Partnership, and they started it last summer, and it includes the United States, Australia, and Japan, but also China, India, and South Korea. If you add up all of those six countries, they're about half the world's population, about half the world's economic output, and about half the world's greenhouse gas emissions, principally carbon dioxide from burning coal, oil, and natural gas. And what this partnership is meant to do is not to set limits on energy use. It's to share, it's to develop and share technologies that will improve our use of energy and make it cleaner so that we'll use energy more efficiently and we won't put as many pollutants like sulfur dioxide and things like that into the air. So I think that President Bush has taken two really good steps, and he's done it, of course, and gotten nothing but grief from everybody in the world and every major newspaper and every major television network that he's some kind of climate criminal. But in fact, he's been quite sensible on this, and he's been pretty consistent.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to John, who's calling from Florida. John, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah. He's saying that a lot of these corporations are behind the eco movement. I just wonder what he thinks about a lot of the grassroots activists that also are very skeptical of corporations, as well as, you know, the
All right, fine. Now, what do you think about the grassroots people who really are very skeptical about the corporations, but they're, in many ways, they're doing just what the corporations want, aren't they?
Yeah, grassroots environmental activists?
Yes, grassroots environmental activists.
Right. Well, you know, I'm skeptical of corporations as well as they are, but in fact, I think they are often doing the work of these a lot of these big corporations. To give you an example, there are a number of corporations now that support legislation like the McCain bill or the Domenici bill. You need to take a break here?
Well, we're going to have to. And,
okay, and then I'll come back and finish.
All right, I think it's important that people understand that most the grassroots people are sincere people who really believe there's a problem and want to preserve the environment. We all do. But, of course, I believe they're being used. All right, our guest is Myron. Bell and Myron, why don't you go ahead and finish up your thought there?
Yes. Well, you know, there are an awful lot of corporations, starting with Enron, going back a few years, but also continuing with some major companies today, major utility companies and some other big companies, that really hope to make a lot of money through higher energy prices. And there are various ways that you can do that. A lot of these big corporations, let me give you an example, the Synergy electric utility, or DuPont, or General Electric, or even some of the oil companies like BP and Shell, they think that they can make money when rationing of fossil fuel energy causes energy prices to go higher. And they think that there are various ways to do that. And therefore, they're supporting things like the McCain-Lieberman bill in the Senate, or the Domenici-Bingaman legislation. And for example, if you're heavily invested in alternative energy technologies like windmills, you can't compete now even with the big tax subsidy for windmills. They get a huge tax subsidy, but it's still too expensive compared to a coal-fired power plant or a nuclear power plant. But if the price of energy is driven up, then those windmills will become much more valuable, and they will, because their energy will be competitively priced. And so there are many. Enron thought that they would be, use their ability to create markets in trading permits to use fossil fuel, that they would make a lot of money that way. So there, a lot of corporate America is really signed on to the idea that energy prices should be a lot higher and that the government should have control of our energy use.
And I agree with you. I think that certainly a lot of people are in this for profit, but other people are in this because they want to lower our living standards, because they have a different worldview, and they believe really that we'd be a lot better off if we got back to where it was before the wicked white man came to America. And you say that's crazy talk. The problem is, we got people out there who really believe that way. Have you run into some of those who they really believe that man is the real problem?
Yeah, and I think that they come in two varieties. We've already talked about one. The elite who believe that basically the mass of people need to be put back into their place if people have a much smaller footprint on the earth, then it will be in much better, the earth will be in much better shape.
Myron, we're out of time. I wish we could go on, and I think we could probably go on for another hour, but unfortunately, by the computer won't let me do it. God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Thank
Bye-bye.
You for having me.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our program today. And certainly I believe there are a lot of wonderful environmentalists who are very, very sincere, and they do not realize that they're being manipulated, and so much of what they read and believe just is not true. And this is why we hope many of you will want to get our 4-tape set on population control, or our video on population control. And, of course, if you get either one of them, you can ask for a free copy of my treatise on the population control agenda. You can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and pull it down. It's up there, and it's well worthwhile reading. Then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will want to get our sustainable development syllabus, because you actually will find the summary of the Global Biodiversity Assessment, which was the plan that came out of the Second Earth Summit. And then, of course, it has the World Water Plan, and it has the World Bank Water Policy, and it has the Earth Charter, which is really the Mein Kampf of the world fascist movement, written by three of the wealthiest people in the world, three of the most powerful people in the world, who, in my estimation, are all, in one way or the other, involved with the occult. Because behind this whole environmental movement are these very, very powerful occult movements. So if you get the Sustainable Development Syllabus, you'll get a great deal of information, but you should get it along with our video on sustainable development and or the 4-tape set on that, because it'll you'll have a background of all of the information that's in the syllabus. Just as with the, if you want to understand the Iraq, the Untold Story video, you want to get the syllabus that goes with that, our water fluoridation talk, the history of water fluoridation, you want to get an agenda syllabus. We try to turn these syllabuses out so that you'll have the documentation. Certainly, if you want to understand the master plan that was laid out at the Millennium Summit back in the year 2000, you want to get the Millennium Summit syllabus. They all have a lot of documentation and information you will never find any other place, and they're all available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Could there really be people who would like to kill off a large part of the world's population? Well, you really need to see our video and or DVD, Planned Population Reduction. Somewhere between 50 and 100 million people have died in the last 33 years since we outlawed DDT. Why did we outlaw DDT? Because it was saving too many human lives by doing away with malaria and so many of the other insect-borne diseases in third-world countries. There are really people who want to do away with other people. Here in America, we have 60 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease. Is that a successful public health policy or a successful birth control, a successful successful population control agenda? And I really believe it is. I think it's a failed public health policy, a successful genocidal policy. They do not want people reproducing, and after all, would you really want to marry a sexual partner who had genital herpes or genital papillomas or other types of sexually transmitted viral diseases? Of course you wouldn't. You destroy these people's lives, and our public health officials are saying, go ahead and be promiscuous. Be as promiscuous as you want to. Just protect yourself. And ladies and gentlemen, they knew exactly what they were doing as they destroyed life. We've already lost 500,000 Americans here from AIDS, a totally unnecessary epidemic. Another million are infected. They're going to die. 30 million dead throughout the world. Another 50 million infected. They knew what they're doing. They know what they're doing today. And if you haven't read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, you need to get it to understand my frustration as I tried to lead the battle in organized medicine in California and throughout the country to try to address that epidemic. And eventually I gave up and started doing talk radio, because here at least some people can understand that there really are evil people out there who would destroy as many lives as they possibly can. And of course, we ask you, of course, to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the survival of Western civilization. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, in a new DVD, the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and Pray for America, Pray for Revival, Pray for Radio Liberty.